And purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Please repeat after me. At the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge. And as a result, he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, whom he could not see before, with the greatest endeavor. The Supreme Lord can be experienced only through the process of devotional service and not by one's personal endeavor in mental speculation. The age of Brahma is calculated in terms of Divya years, which are distinct from the solar years of human beings. The Divya years are calculated in Bhagavad Gita 8:17, Sahastra Yuga Paryantam Aharyad Brahmano Viduha. Brahma's one day is equal to 1,000 times the aggregate of the four yugas, calculated to be 4.3 million years. On that basis, Brahma meditated for 100 years before he could understand the supreme cause of all causes, and then he wrote the Brahma Samhita, which is approved and recognized by Lord Chaitanya, and in which he sings Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. One has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can render service unto him or know him as he is. Do we have a roaming mic? Okay, great. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Jakshurun Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sampadantikam. Vanneham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavane Shwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasani Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So before we begin today, I'd like to ask for blessings from all the Vaishnavas present and all those present online as well, so that I can help to facilitate a better understanding of this verse in purport in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I will be asking a couple of questions, just to let you know in advance. So please be ready for the questions. So in terms of context, this chapter is titled The Manifestation of Brahma, from Garbhodakashaya Vishnu, and Maitreya Muni speaking to Vidura on the Bhagavad Purana, beginning with creation. In the previous verses, it described how Brahma was contemplating and trying to find the cause of his origin on the base of the lotus from which he was born, but he was unable to seek it out. He then stopped searching and returned to the top of the lotus, and controlling all objectives, concentrated his mind on the Supreme Lord. In this verse, it explains that after Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge and so could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, who couldn't be seen before with the greatest endeavor. So in the purport, there are two sentences that particularly stood out to me. So I'm going to focus our class on those two sentences, though there's a lot of content which we could focus on, but because of time limitation, I'll focus on these two. So the first question, get ready to listen. In the purport, this stood out to me, as I said. This is the last sentence, yeah, of the purport. One has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service unto him or know him as he is. I'll repeat that. One has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service unto him or know him as he is. So my question is, what strikes you about this? Any reflections or realizations on this, whether that be from scripture or from your personal experience, as long as it's brief? Yes, go in there, Prabhu. Please, can we get the mic?
Well, one thing that strikes me is, because I don't know him, it means whatever service I'm doing isn't really service in a sense.
Do you want to expand on that a little bit more?
Well, what you read said, unless you know him, you cannot engage in service. So because I know I don't know him, then my service isn't proper service, because I don't know him, therefore I'm not actually rendering proper service. It's service of a kind, but it's not. It's service under the modes of material nature, and it gives me a adhikar by which maybe in the future I may do pure service.
Wonderful.
With knowledge, with love.
So there's an explanation just to reflect back on you of something called Purasharya Vidhi, where when one is preparing the yajna before one performs a yajna, and that's still counted as part of the yajna. So our devotional service that we're performing now, even though, as you rightly said, you do not know him fully as he is, and this verse says that one has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service unto him or know him, still, because it's part and parcel of that preparation for performing pure devotional service, it's considered to be devotional service. So that's my understanding from his own as Sri Ram Swami, my spiritual master. But thank you for that realization. Can we have some more thoughts on this? So just to say, one has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service unto him or know him as he is. There's a few. So Keshav Maharaj, please, if that's possible. Thank you, Maharaj.
I think the first thing that came to my mind when I heard that was Dhruva Maharaj, when he was doing his austerities, and then the Supreme Lord appeared, and then there's that famous verse, Yonta Pravishta Mamavacha Mimam Prashuktam, that he, as soon as he got touched by the conch of the Lord, then he said, my power of speech, my intelligence, all my faculties have been enlivened by you, and therefore I can now glorify you. So that Krishna is Rishikesh, he's the master of all the senses. So if we want to serve Krishna with our senses, with our intelligence, then ultimately Krishna has to enliven them, because nabhavet grayav indriye, like by the dull material senses you can't. So.
Wonderful realization. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. This point that when Dhruva Maharaj was touched by the conch shell of Lord Vishnu, his senses were fully enlivened, and then he was able to offer these wonderful prayers to Lord Vishnu and express what was in the deepest parts of his heart. So in the same way, you know, sarva padi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevinam bhakti ruchate, we have to wait for the mercy of the Lord before we can actually fully be free from all other designations and engage in pure devotional service. And we can only do that also when we engage our senses in the service of the master of the senses. So just another thought that came to me. Thank you so much, Maharaj. Did you want to say anything more on that? There were some other hands, but I couldn't see who they were. Yes, Prabhu here at the front.
So how I see this as, when we are rendering service, we render different services, but here it says one cannot do that without the mercy. So how I see it as, even the opportunity to render service, that is mercy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that kind realization. So we're very fortunate that we have the opportunity to render service, and in that is the Lord's mercy. But at the same time, one here it's also explained that one also has to wait for his full mercy to manifest before one can render pure devotional service and know him as he is. So both are needed in synergy almost for us to really be able to make progress. That's what I'm understanding from what you're saying. Thank you so much. Vaishnavis, I see a hand over here. Can you make sure it's switched on, please? Thank
you. Yeah, I was just thinking on the sentence where he says that, you know, to understand Krishna, you have to have his mercy. There's a lot of us used to come to the temple, read the Bhagavad Gita, or at least me, read the Bhagavad Gita by myself a lot of times, not understood it. It's only when you get, Krishna sees your desire, then his mercy is, he sends some devotees to help you, but that's his mercy. And then everything starts to become clearer. The more devotional service you do, the more sincerely you do it, the more Krishna reveals the knowledge in your heart. It's not about being scholarly or anything. Like, you can't, even if you're the most scholarly person, you may not be able to understand the Gita. You may remember it off by heart, you may remember the Srimad Bhagavatam, the shloks off by heart, but you won't understand it. And so, yeah, we're really lucky that Krishna has bestowed his mercy upon us, that we've got association. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Wonderful point that we render devotional service and we're waiting for this enlightenment to happen from within the heart. This torchlight of knowledge to be illuminated, as explains in the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, from within, so that we can really render pure devotional service. And this happens primarily through the mercy of the Vaishnavas, as you've explained, which is our, one could argue and, you know, consider that it's probably the most important anga of devotional service, sadhu sangha, because that actually gives everything else. There's one other hand at the back, Mataji.
Krishna, what I understand it to mean that Krishna knows everything. So Krishna knows whether you're sincere, you're coming with an open heart to him, despite your disposition. So he will render mercy unto you if you're really sincere and you love him. That's what he's asking for.
Wonderful.
Show your love to me, and he will pluck you out accordingly. If you're not, he will weed you out. If you are sincere, he will pluck you out and raise you up. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Simple as that.
Thank you so much. So by expressing our loving sentiments through devotional service, so we can try to attract the Lord's mercy, and he will either uplift us, or if he sees that it's not for us, he may put us on a slight diversion. Thank you so much, Mataji. So it's so nice to discuss in the Assembly of Vaishnavas, because you've all come up with different lights and different angles of vision on this simple sentence from this beautiful purport by Srila Prabhupada. And it's very enlivening for me to hear from all of you and to contemplate this deeper. And I'm wondering if what I'm thinking or the trajectory I'm on will align with some of your thoughts, but hopefully it will all weave in together. So one thing that really struck me in this sentence, which is slightly different than the points that you've all made actually, is this word wait. one has to wait for the mercy of the Lord. And maybe it's because I'm an impatient person. Maybe that's why it struck me. this point that's being given here is that, this waiting is actually a quality of surrender. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about it in his Sharanagati prayers. One of the points being is, one of the six main points is to expect the Lord's mercy or to await the Lord's mercy. To expect his mercy means also to wait for him. And waiting means that we're waiting for something to happen. If we're confident it's going to happen, then we wait for it. And it's worth waiting for. And this is a point Mukunda Maharaj makes when he's giving class on this same verse. So these points are actually tied in together. And I reflected on the third text of the Nectar of Instruction, Utsaha Nishaya Taryat, Tat Tat Karma Pravartanat, Sangha Tyagat Sato Vrite Sadbir Bhakti Prashidati. So the first three points that are mentioned here that are very favorable for devotional service are enthusiasm, confidence, and patience. And then the latter three that are talked about in the translation are acting according to the Vedic injunctions, such as hearing and chanting, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, and avoiding the association of non-devotees. So reflecting on the first three points here, which tie in with this word wait. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that even in the material world, if we want something, we have to be enthusiastic. We have to want it to happen. We have to be sure it has to pervade our consciousness. And if we're confident it's going to happen, and when that confidence and enthusiasm is there, then we can be patient. Then we can wait for it because we know it's going to happen. An endeavor executed in intelligence, with intelligence and Krishna consciousness, is enthusiasm. And the devotee finds the correct means to engage everything in Krishna's service. This is the verse which talks about yukta vairagya that's referred to in the purport. So devotional service, Srila Prabhupada explains, it's not something idle, it's not something that's just meditation, it's practical application. And these activities we have to execute with patience. There's two examples that are given in that purport, two analogies of being patient. Can anyone remember them? Don't look it up. if you can remember roughly what Srila Prabhupada's taught, I mean, the Nectar of Instruction is a very... Oh, there's somebody here, Mataji? Yes, please. Two examples Srila Prabhupada gives.
I can think of one of them, the fact that Brahma had to wait 100 years.
Yes, that's in this particular verse that we're talking about, absolutely correct. But I was actually looking for two examples from the purport to Nectar of Instruction, verse 3.
Patience and determination?
Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about. But I was looking for two anecdotes that Srila Prabhupada uses to explain patience. Jagat, does it come to mind? Oh, sorry. Anyway, if it comes back to you, please.
He talks about when you're married, when you're expecting a child, it takes time. You have to have patience for that. I think
absolutely.
I remember that being one example.
Yes, correct. Yeah, 5 points. 5 stars. So one of the points Srila Prabhupada gives, one of the anecdotes he gives, is just that, just as when a young lady, when she gets married, she's hoping to have children, but she can't expect that's going to happen straight away. Srila Prabhupada uses this word surrender. We can also understand that as being shelter, that she first has to take shelter of her husband and continue with her duties in Grihastha Ashram and remain confident that in time this will happen. So that is one of the two examples that's given. Thank you very much. There's a second one. Does anybody remember? It's actually from Srila Prabhupada's own life, which gives a big clue. Okay, I'm sure you all know it. I mean, you do all know it, actually, because you wouldn't be here otherwise. It's only because I've looked this up, otherwise I wouldn't remember this either. But Srila Prabhupada talks about his own life in terms of trying to establish Krishna consciousness. I'm trying to see if I've got his exact words. He says, do I have them? Yeah, I do. Hang on. He says, indeed, this Krishna consciousness movement was started single-handedly. And in the beginning, there was no response. But because we continued to execute our devotional activities with patience, people gradually began to understand this, the importance of the movement. And now they're eagerly participating. One shouldn't be impatient in discharging devotional service, but should take instruction from the spiritual master and execute them, I think it means, sorry, I can't read my own handwriting, execute that with patience, depending on the mercy of Guru and Krishna. The successful execution of Krishna consciousness requires both patience and confidence. So, you know, we often talk about this and understand this and study this from Srila Prabhupada's life. But he, in his own life, is so much highlighting how much patience he must have had to have in those early years where he was preparing the foundations for the Krishna consciousness movement. You know, that section of Lilamrita is called A Lifetime in Preparation. And we hear of how he tried to set up the League of Devotees and it failed. We hear of how he was at one point preaching to one devotee, I forget his name, and he was cooking for him and serving him and trying to make him a devotee, you know, to set up his League of Devotees. And he stayed for some time, but then he couldn't stay with it, you know. And Srila Prabhupada would go to all these wealthy families' homes and ask them to give one child. He'd say, you have so many children. You have so many wonderful children. Give me one. Give me just one of your children. And I'll make him into a Vaishnava, you know. And it's actually heartbreaking when you think about it now, considering what Srila Prabhupada has managed to accomplish. But this phase where he was preparing and when he was staying in Radha Damodar temple, in the rooms at Radha Damodar, Jai Shishu Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Shishu Gurani Tai Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. You know, and he didn't, you know, he wouldn't spend money even on replacing his dhoti. All his money was spent on paper and getting to the printing press and checking the errors. And then when he got his back to Godhead, distributing it on the streets of Delhi in the boiling hot weather on his own at tea shops, you know. I mean, I'm sure all of you at some point have been on book distribution, but, you know, the 40 or the very, very hot summers of Delhi are very difficult to endure. I mean, I don't know if you've been to Vrindavan even in March or April, but you can't even stand on the ground with your bare feet after 10 a.m. You'll get burnt. And there's Srila Prabhupada on the streets, you know, with his Back to Godhead magazines, going to these tea shops. And then actually he was so humble that somebody actually said to Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, why are you printing these magazines? You know, people look at them and then they don't really value them so much. You know, maybe you should write some books. And obviously Srila Prabhupada had already, I think at that point, or he was writing, I can't remember the full chronology, the Bhagavad Gita, his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. But Srila Prabhupada was so humble. But anyway, this point about Srila Prabhupada's life really struck me, that it's almost 40 years in preparation before, you know, and then when things started to take off for him, they really took off, you know, in terms of the Krishna conscious movement. And this also ties in with Maharaj's point about Dhruva Maharaj's, or at least feels to me that it ties in, because it's almost as if Krishna granted his full mercy. And then all of a sudden, he's in Tompkins Square Park, in the perfect place, at the perfect time, when there's this rebellion and counterculture and people who are just looking for something other than materialism. They're looking for something real, something substantial. They're hungry. They're really thirsty for spiritual knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada, despite his thick Bengali accent and his his coming from a completely different culture was able to transmit somehow this information to these young people and transform their lives. So, anyway, sorry, that was a slight tangent, but hopefully it can highlight this point about patience. So, I was going to say that, you know, sometimes we think that a week or a year is a really long time to wait for something. In this purport, Lord Brahma is meditating for 100 years, and his 12 hours is just 4.3 billion years. So 100 years of his is a very, very long time, 311 trillion and 40 billion years of our human years. That's a very long time to wait. So if we can't fully relate to Lord Brahma, we have Srila Prabhupada's example also. But this point being that, yeah, we do have to wait and also expect the Lord's mercy. And sometimes we might feel that, you know, I've been doing this for such a long time, I still feel like I'm not getting anywhere. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the example. Does anybody know which example he gives? Of why sometimes we feel like we're working so strenuously in spiritual life, but we're not quite able to really make progress, so it doesn't feel like we're making progress. It's a quick anecdote that he gives. Yes, Govinda Prabhu. Can we have the mic, if possible? No, we're strenuously endeavouring, but we...
He gives the example of rowing a boat was an anchor down. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So we've got our anchor out. And what does the... Govinda Prabhu, can you tell us what the anchor symbolizes or what the analogy is in terms of our life? What's our anchor that's kind of holding us back?
I think the anchor means material attachments.
Yes. It's an arthas that's described, yes, so material attachments. So we're rowing and we're rowing and, you know, we're chanting and we're chanting and we're making, trying so difficult, but we have these unwanted things in the heart. These anarthas, these seeds that haven't been fully fried, they're not impotent yet, they still have some potency, these seeds of material desire that are hindering us. And there's also another reason sometimes that we often have to wait a long time, is that the Lord may choose to withhold his mercy. So we have to remember that Krishna is Swarat, he's independent, and he's not obliged to anybody. He doesn't have to do anything. There's no formula in spiritual life, and sometimes people find this very frustrating. They're like, but I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm following this, I'm, you know, I've read the Bhagavatam like 6 times, I wake up at like 2 o'clock and I chant my, you know, that there's no formula in Krishna consciousness. There's no guarantee that Krishna, if I do this, this and this and this, am I going to get your mercy? It's up to him. It's up to him. It's completely his prerogative. And so if he chooses to withhold it for some reason, or he chooses to keep us waiting, that's his decision. That's part of the definition of who he is. And there's another very famous verse before I go on to the next question that I have for you, which is from 10.14.8 of the Bhagavatam, which talks about this waiting as well, which is, I'm sure you all know, you can recite it with me. Tatenukambam sushamikshamano punjana evatmakritam vipakam ridvagvapurbir vidadanamaste jivetayo muktipade sadayapak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it's become his rightful claim. And just the very beginning of the purport, Sridhar Swami explains that just as a legitimate son just has to stay alive to gain his inheritance from his father. I don't know how many of you have got inheritances coming to you, but hopefully you all have. Or we all have from Krishna, either way. So we just have to, you know, stay alive to gain an inheritance. Similarly, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the Lord. So we just have to stay alive in Krishna consciousness. I think that gives me a lot of consolation, maybe because I'm not very good at my sadhana. And I'm sure Srila Prabhupada doesn't mean just kind of like treading water, but he, you know, means hopefully flourishing in spiritual life. Nevertheless, the words used here are staying alive in Krishna consciousness. So we can understand that just by remaining in the boat or remaining in the safety net of the association of Vaishnavas and patiently suffering any karmic reactions we have due to us, but expecting and waiting for the Lord's mercy, we will, it says here, surely eligible for liberation, for it's become his rightful claim. Yes, Prayajan Prabhu, please. Yes, of course.
In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a very nice thing that also corresponds with the Sriyesh Upanishad.
Yes.
It says here, it's in chapter 18, and then it's 1857. In all activities, depend on me, and always work under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. If, however, you do not work under such consciousness and act under false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. But there's a very nice verse in Sri Isha Upanishad. It's Mantra 17, and it talks about death. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life be merged into the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all the sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you.
Thank you so much for sharing that very, very profound information from Sri Isha Upanishad, which we definitely need to hear. And the first section you said reminded me of the verse from the Gita, Deviyesha Gunamai Mamaya Maya, Duratyaya Mam Eva Ye Prapadyante Mayam Etam Tarantite. That Krishna explains that by my grace you will overcome all difficulties in terms of this material nature, the three modes of material nature, by my mercy. So thank you so much for sharing that. I have one more question for you before we wrap up. We have 5 minutes, so we're going to have to be quick. So Lord Brahma's meditating like this for 100 years, and we've discussed it's a very long time. And what's his conclusion? It's something that we've all kind of been touching on. His conclusion is the first sentence of this purport. The Supreme Lord can be experienced only through the process of devotional service, and not by one's personal endeavor in mental speculation. So what do you understand by this, is my question to you. The Supreme Lord can be experienced only through the process of devotional service, and not by one's personal endeavor in mental speculation. Any thoughts? Yes, there's a hand here on the lady's side. Can we get the mic over to them, please? Thank you.
What Prabhupada is trying to say is that there's a prescribed process to understand Krishna, and that's the nine persons of bhakti. Independently, if you want to, you have to follow that. There's no alternative, really. Follow the formula. You can't make the same recipe if you use different ingredients.
Brilliant.
So instead of speculating as to what you have to do, actually render devotional service, because Krishna's telling us, that's how you understand me. So it's wise to do that. And if you do anything else, you're going to fail at it, because that's not the recipe to get Krishna's mercy. So do that, basically.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for that lovely point. So rather than trying to figure out, you know, I don't know how many of you are preaching on the yoga scene or out there on the front line kind of speaking to people who want to have an experience. They want to experience God. They want, you know, they're expecting to see something or, you know, have some epiphany or revelation. They really want this experience. And so they're trying so many different things out there, really, honestly, with sincerity and earnesty. They're trying so many things. But as we understand from our definition of pure devotional service, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulyena krishna anushilinam bhaktir uttama, that pure devotional service is free from mental speculation and fruitive activities. And a lot of the things that are being tried out there actually fall into those two categories. And so as hard as they try, they're somehow coming up against a wall or a very difficult phase at certain points, because there's only so far they can go. And we're so lucky that Srila Prabhupada's given us everything in such a simple way. So three texts prior to this text. By the way, if anyone else has any realization on that sentence, please do say at any point, just let me know. Three texts prior, so just in this section, it explains that Lord Brahma, this is in text 19, Lord Brahma, thus contemplating, entered the water through the channel of the stem of the lotus. But in spite of entering the stem and going nearer to the navel of Vishnu, he couldn't trace out the route. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada touches on this point of mental speculation. By dint of one's personal endeavor, one may go nearer to the Lord, but without the Lord's mercy, one cannot reach the ultimate point. Such understanding of the Lord is possible only by devotional service, as confirmed in the Gita, 1855, Bhaktyamam Abhijanati Yavanyas Chashmi Tatvata. And I heard His Holiness Bhakti Chiruswami speaking on this yesterday evening, and he was from 10 years ago at Soho Street, at class on the Brahma Samhita. And he was also explaining that the reason also that Brahma could not trace, because he got very close to the root, is because he was trying to look for something spiritual with material vision. So that's one point on mental speculation, that Lord Brahma himself, to a certain degree, has tried in his own endeavor, just in this section, we can see, and he couldn't get there, you know. And it took him a long time. It says a millennium he was kind of going down the stem of this lotus, and he couldn't find it. He actually got very close to the Kala Chakra as well, and was bewildered by that, but he couldn't get to his source. And that's Lord Brahma, you know, what to speak of us. So, and also five texts earlier, it talks about this in 17, that in the purport, that no one can know the mystery of creation and cosmic manifestation simply by mental speculation. The human being is so limited in his capacity that without the help of the Supreme, he can hardly understand the mystery of the will of the Lord in terms of creation, continuance, and destruction. Yeah, and it also says that Lord Brahma was looking for this route for one millennium, you know, which is a very, very long period of time. So Srila Prabhupada's, you know, explained to us again and again through this pastime that we just can't do this on our own, you know. And there's something really nice I'd like to read to you from Bhurijan Prabhu's book, Unveiling His Lotus Feet. For those of you who haven't seen that book, it's amazing. It's a summary study on the first four cantos of the Bhagavatam. He says, so this is Bhurijan Prabhu, trying again to understand, so this is coming up to bring us to this verse, actually to the verse prior, which Paramaranava Prabhu gave class on Friday. Trying again to understand, but by a different method now, Brahma sat with focused intelligence and meditated on the Supreme Lord, the ultimate cause of everything. Brahma's meditation ultimately brought him success because he renounced his own attempt to understand and instead surrendered himself in devotional service. So sometimes it's very difficult for us to realize, and sometimes it's very hard to also explain when we're speaking to new people, that you may have all these ideas about how you're going to experience God or how you're going to experience the transcendental or transcendence, but you might actually have to park your ideas to the side and actually just theoretically accept. Just theoretically, as Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, text 1, purport 1.1, you know, just theoretically even accept that Krishna could be God and that this could be something that actually can give you the experience that you're looking for, and take on the path of devotional service. And there's a nice point in 10.14.4 of the Bhagavatam on this point of mental speculation, because I was really thinking about, you know, what is mental speculation? We say, you know, we shouldn't be speculating on so many things, and sometimes it's difficult to know, even as a spiritual practitioner, am I speculating? Is this okay? So I looked this up a bit further, and it talks about, in that purport, that as a person who beats an empty husk of wheat, oh sorry, this is in the translation, cannot get grain. One who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. And in the purport it says, the result of this person is just the trouble and bother that come from following an artificial process. A fool may beat an empty husk, not knowing that the grain's been removed. Similarly, foolish is the person who throws his mind again and again into the pursuit of knowledge without surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is the very substance and goal of knowledge, just as grain is the substance and goal of the entire agricultural effort. Okay, we're going to have to stop in one. We're actually over time, but I have one more paragraph, if you can be patient with me, which I'll tell you, read to you. This is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, on this point of direct experience, because that was another bit in the sentence that I really wanted to touch on. So, Sanatana Goswami explains in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, except by direct experience, no one can rightly understand Vaikuntha. By hearing from someone who has seen Vaikuntha, one may gain only a glimmer of understanding. Nonetheless, when a devotee aspiring for the Lord's service hears the pure instructions of his self-realized spiritual master and faithfully practices the disciplines such a guru recommends, the devotee gradually becomes pure in heart, and when his faith sufficiently matures, he can see the spiritual world. Only by that direct perception does knowledge become perfect. Casual hearing, even from those who have seen the truth, is not enough. One must become a disciple of such an authority and accept the disciplines that lead to self-realization. So this is also tying in with some of the points that have been discussed here today about actually practicing devotional service and taking on the process fully and taking that shelter in the parampara of a living spiritual master, and taking on the full process of devotional service. So I'm going to stop there. We are over time by 5 minutes. If there is one or two questions, I think it's okay to take them. And thereafter, we'll have to stop. So Govinda Prabhu first, please, if that's okay. Who's got the mic? Oh, it's over here. Can we get it to Govinda Prabhu? One question, I think that might have to be it. And if anybody has services to go for, please, it's fine for you to leave. I'm sorry, I'm over time.
People go over time quite a lot.
Okay.
But this is a question that came from someone listening online. They just sent it to me on WhatsApp.
Gosh.
And it's very interesting when I like it. It says Lord Brahma meditated for 100 years, but his lifetime is 100 years. So how does that tie up?
Okay. I actually don't know. Paramahansa Prabhu, do you know?
No, it's...
It was 100. Lord Brahma actually meditates for 100 of his years, it says.
At the end of Brahma's 100 years. Of Brahma's years. It's Brahma's 100 years.
Yeah, Brahma. It's Lord Brahma's 100 years. There's one answer we have. Prabhu, I've forgotten your name.
I don't have an answer. I've spent the last 20 minutes trying to Google this.
Oh, okay.
I came across a link which gives different acharyas' explanations or translations. And basically, the conclusion is inconclusive. So.
Okay, thank you so much for having done the research, because I really wouldn't have been able to figure that out. So I'm glad that somebody has spent 20 minutes looking into this. And unfortunately, the answer to the person online is we still don't know. It's inconclusive, actually. The acharyas say it's inconclusive. That is the answer. Okay, we'll have one more, because that was an online question. I feel sorry for those of you who are here in person. If there's any in-person questions. Or realization, if you'd like. Yes, Prabhu, please. Someone give This devotee, please, the mic.
It's not a question. It's comment on the, you know, the first question you asked about the sentence you picked out. The we have to wait for the mercy of the Lord before we can engage in devotional service and understand God. And that made me think of the Sankirtan devotees out on the street, out on Harinam, giving out the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, how they're just transparent via mediums for that mercy. And by engaging people in giving a donation, knowingly that that's what they're giving it to, it's not a gratis agreement, it's a little bit of devotional service they're performing, and in return they get a book, Prabhupada's mercy in the form of a book, maybe a Bhagavad Gita, which if they read they can understand God. That was my comment, and everybody out there, isn't it, in like London and all these towns and cities, they're waiting, they're all just waiting.
Waiting,
the Sankirtan devotee on Harinam or on Mukdishivishan.
Wonderful point. Thank you so much. So just as we have to wait for the mercy, there are many millions of conditioned souls in the world who are just waiting for the Sankirtan devotees, the army of Lord Chaitanya, to come out and share the mercy so that they can even just begin the devotional service that Govinda Prabhu was talking about right at the very beginning, where we don't know Krishna yet, but we're just trying. We're just trying with our minds, our body, our words to please him somehow, to use the vehicle that we've been given in this human birth to learn more about him and to serve him. So there's so many souls out there waiting. And just recently I was on book distribution. I hardly ever go. I went and I was having a really difficult time and I was thinking, should I even be here? You know, the mind kind of... And then all of a sudden somebody came and it was like they had just been waiting. And so I'm sure those of you who have been out on the streets, you know, sometimes very cold, sometimes you're there for a long time and you get so many people just who won't even stop what to speak of having a conversation with you. And then somebody comes along who's waiting, who's actually excited to receive the books and actually wants to know. And then you feel like, okay, the day was worth, it was worth the freezing cold feet and cold fingers and rebuffs from everybody for that one person who is actually waiting for the Lord's mercy. So on that note, I think we will end. Thank you so much for your patience. I'm sorry if I wasn't so coherent. And Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol.